Hi there, you're listening to Cat Talk, a podcast series brought to you from Stockholm by Kunskapsskolan Education, reflecting and connecting educators of more than 100 schools that use the Kunskapsskolan Education program across Sweden, the UK, the Netherlands, India, USA, and the Middle East, empowering students to master the challenges of today and shape the world of tomorrow. Glad you're listening. How do we make sure that every human being gets access to good education? And how do we give all humans a better start in life? Fundamental questions that have driven Päijä Emilsson, the educational visionary behind and founding father of Kunskapsskolan Education, throughout his life. Being a successful serial entrepreneur, at the same time seeking answers to the things that really matter, leading to the ambition to offer students the schools that he, as a child, did not have. Today in Cat Talk, we are very proud to talk to Päijä Emilsson himself about the Kunskapsskolan initiative that has over the years changed the lives of so many, about what brought him to the world of education, about the challenges that had to be overcome, and about the recent contribution to the truly first global study about education through the Mahatma Gandhi Institute of Education, organized by UNESCO and conducted by 260 education experts from 45 countries. Päijä, a warm welcome to you in Cat Talk. It's so great to have you here.
Thank you.
Wonderful. And of course, to you, Christian. Christian Vettel, Director of Education at Kunskapsskolan globally and co-host of all Cat Talk episodes. Great to have you.
Oh, thank you very much. A special episode today.
I think so, too. It's a very special episode today. Let me start off with a quote, Päijä. You once said, "My driving force is to do what is important. And if you ask me what is important, it is giving children the best possible start in life." Is that what you got involved into education 25 or even more years ago? Or was it, as I suggested in the introduction, a bit more personal?
Of course, the background was more personal, even if what you stated is truly what I believe in. Now, when I went to school, I had a fairly bad experience in school when I was 10 years old. So I lived in a small city, and when I was 10 years old, I went to live with my grandmother in Stockholm instead. And you know, you had no right at that time to choose school. It was up to politicians and bureaucrats to decide. But my parents were going abroad for some time, so I got the chance. And ever since then, I believe you don't need to have a grandmother in order to have the right to choose school. It should be a right for everyone. So, you know, when I came to a new school and got a new chance, very important, and that inspired me a lot. I saw differences in my friends at the school, how they learned, what they understood. So ever since then, I became even more convinced that education is something personal. People are different, of course, equal values, but different. And then it's up to school system to cater to the specific needs of everyone.
Can you remember the moment in which you came to the conclusion that there was room for improvement within the Swedish system?
When I was active in student politics, I think I wrote my first text about the future of education, 1963 or something like that. Then when I lived in Paris with the children, we were part of starting a Montessori school. I came back to Sweden. We tried to start schools. At that time, Sweden had a very monolithic school system. 99.5% went to the public school run by municipalities. You had no right to choose. And that led to a number of protests in Sweden, where people said, "We would like to keep our school," when politicians decided to get rid of that school. You know, you had a school with students that were good at music, and the politician wanted to close it down. The idea was that everyone should be in the same classroom for the first 9 years, regardless of their learning structure and the motivation. So that led finally in 1991 to a very unique decision in Sweden where we introduced a voucher by which everyone had a right to choose school, a independent-run school or a government-run school, and the same amount of money should go to each one. Unique system. You did not need to pick rich parents to choose a school. So about 10 years after that change in Swedish policy was made, I then took the initiative to start Kunskapsskolan with a number of people extremely good at personalized education, understanding it. I'm not an educationalist. I'm an entrepreneur. So I managed to get right people to build it. As you know, Christian, are in the middle of doing that.
I mean, I had the opportunity to start one of the early schools in Kunskapsskolan. And I think to me, it was just so clear that, you know, first of all, you felt the vision of, you know, this was about seeing every child. I think that was a force that to me was just amazing. But I think, you know, what I always respected is, you know, your view on the professionals, Peja, is that, you know, we were really given the chance to use our skills to build our model in a professional way. So perspectives of learning, tools of learning, and the way we formed the actual learning was giving a lot to us professionals. And that combination of the real vision of the personalized learning together with professionals building the program, I think was an important part of the journey.
Okay, you started, or you took the initiative to start Kunskapsskolan Education in the way you just mentioned, making use of this new and revolutionary system of vouchers. Nevertheless, you were not greeted by all. I would say what happened? What are the challenges that you were facing at that time?
I think we saw at the early stage in Sweden a great interest for education that focused just on education. You know, we have had a tradition in Sweden to the important thing is to develop young people into good citizens. And now we said knowledge is important. That's what's also the reason why we named it Kunskapsskolan, knowledge. At that time in Sweden, knowledge was not the focus in education. But what then happened was we got lots of interest from the United Kingdom. And there are a number of people interested in personalized education. So we actually were contacted by the British government and ran a few academies in the UK, which was very interesting. We learned a lot, but very complicated system. But with that experience, we took the step to India. And I said, well, India is slightly larger than Sweden. And the English language is extremely important. And there we really found a very, very inspiring development. And you could see even more how our educational model helped to develop people in a very, very good way. So that was extremely inspiring at that time.
Could you elaborate a bit on the early days in Sweden itself?
Well, if you take the first year we started, we got 1,000 students. And, you know, they did not come to Kunskapsskolan because they loved our model. They came to us because they did not like the schools they went to. You know, and I said, what parents will put their children in a completely new school? And they do it because the other one was so bad. But we got into a very positive spin from the beginning. Enthusiastic teachers working together. I remember I had the school inspection coming and saying, you pay, this is fantastic. Here, no one is left behind. We love your system. So we got lots of very positive remarks during the first years. I said the first 5-6 years were very positive like that. And then the free school system became larger. You know, in Sweden now, out of 2 million students, 400,000 goes to independent schools. It's a lot. So we became a threat to some politicians that we who believed that they were the best one to improve education. So then we have had some more debate, but step by step, the free school system has continued to develop, become stronger and stronger. And our role as the provider of personal education has become even stronger. We get very, very positive remarks from the authorities in Sweden.
Christina, how did you experience these early years?
What I found very inspiring from the start is that Pei and the top management really found strong, positive, inspiring school leaders. So we had a really strong group of school leaders leading the first schools in Kunskapsskolan. And that meant I was fairly young at the point. I was 25 years. I just finished teaching college, coming in to this inspiring environment, you know, really doing your best, really delivering for every child. So even if, as Pei said, there was a lot of students that came to our model that didn't really know what to expect. But with you know, the strong idea, with the co-creation of our pedagogic model, I think we managed so many different students in those first years that I think that platform made us ready to take any students all around Sweden. So building both, you know, a professional model, building the atmosphere along teachers that this is important, and having strong school leaders, it's really made it a really inspiring environment. And for myself, when I started off as a teacher, I had no real idea that I would be a school leader. But working with all these inspiring leaders, both in the top management as well as head of school, that inspired me to take the path of also working, you know, as head of school myself over some years. So that was, it was an amazing time, and it still is. But I think it was important with the vision. But as I said before, the mix of the vision and professional people working together, I think that was made it.
And Pia, you talked about the British government contacting you with regard to wanting to know what this was all about. If we look fast forward a bit to today, if we look at the world where Kunskapsskolan is active in various countries, what has created the breakthrough in your opinion with regard to the enthusiasm and Kunskapsskolan?
Let's first get back to a few very important elements in Sweden. You know, we made from the beginning a very positive agreement with the trade unions, which meant that our teachers could focus on education. That was very, very important. We got many more hours for education, and we got the structure in the school that we made sure that everyone was really involved in the work. And we also, another aspect was what we added our every week, every student has 15 minutes talk to the teacher. I used to say that very few parents have 15 serious minutes every week with their children. So, you know, we had a structure where you built up, and that was very, very successful. The whole model, that meant that we used the taxpayers' money, because it was paid for our taxes, in a more efficient and prudent way. That's the important. You get more education for what we put in. At that time, during the early year 2000s, I traveled a lot and spoke about education. At that time, many were hesitant. Education is for politicians to handle. But we saw substantial changes about 15 years ago, where in country after country, you realize that in order to provide more education, you need to get in private activities of various kinds. You saw the different way in education, the digitalization, more efficient ways of doing it. I sometimes talk about smart production. And, you know, if you look at the traditional school, it's been very much the same for many, many time. And then we looked at our schools, designed in a different way. The teachers always there. It's completely different structure, which gives a good environment for teaching. And that we got lots of interest from various countries. But still, many of them had extremely strict rules, you know, the law saying a classroom has to be this size, a corridor has to be this size, the school can only be one story, you know, lots of very detailed regulations. But then we've gone into countries where you see in other countries how they now open up to new technology and changing. So we see we get lots of inspiration from Holland, the UK also, and India, of course, and the Middle East, how education can then different ways. You get a cross-fertilization between the various experiences. That has, I would say, is one of the most interesting experiences, the change from the last 10, 15 years, that education, you need, in order to provide good education, you need to also use the private side in a smart way.
The other thing is, you've been talking about the best possible start in life. I would argue that in the last 20 years, that has gained importance tremendously. Young people are so dependent on how their first start in life is in their education with regard to whether they can be either successful in business or just be being happy in their life. Do you agree?
Absolutely. You know, and as we start to talk at an early stage about educating the global generation. And it's very interesting, you say, when I listen to the students in India talking to our students in the UK, and they have different views of what happened when India became a free country. Or you have different ways how you describe the history of a country and others. Of course, you have to take into account those cultural differences. And get into mathematics and physics and other things where you have more of the same kind of curriculum. So the exchange of views is one of the most exciting things when I listen to various teachers with various environments and how they combine and draw their experiences and in that way providing a better education for the next generation.
Also, within cultural circumstances, for instance, you've talked about India. We've made Christian and I made an episode, a Cat Talk episode about India. And if you look at the education, the Kunskapsskolan education within the context of the Indian culture, that could not be more distant from each other, I would say. And still, it flourishes like none other. It's great, isn't it?
It's worked. That's one of the exciting things that how it works so well. You have a number of similarities and you exchange experiences, but at the same time, of course, you have to respect traditions, cultural differences. And that was one of the interesting when I took part in this Mahatma Gandhi Institute UNESCO study with from 50 countries with experiences and to see what are the challenges and opportunities for education in the future. That gave a lot, looking at some very traditional structures and then how it opened up. And I was even more impressed with a number of countries with new ways of doing things and at the same time, all the time, respecting the key role of the teacher, because the teacher is the key figure in providing education.
And the funny thing is that it is often stated that, you know, all kinds of technological advances might make the teacher less important. But the fact is that the opposite is true, isn't it? The teacher becomes more important all the time.
Absolutely. You know, it's there are some people believe that as long as you have some online education, it won't function. We can talk different hybrid models. And of course, pupils are different. Some can do it very well when they are sit online. But in most cases, you find different kinds of combinations. But what the technology can do is that you can personalize education in a completely different way. I've been today at a meeting with the Karolinska Institute and discussed with scientists about various of problems in learning, disability, various kinds of things where you have to treat people in different way. And I said, we are very good at that. When we can take in those with very specific needs and have them in the same school and not need to separate them from others. I'm a firm believer in a school where everyone meets. And that's what technology can do, that you could cater, do the education different way, even if you are all together.
Yeah, I think what is important is, since we have the view that, you know, every child is different and we need to respect them, I think that has also made it possible for Kunskapsskolan to enter different countries. Because with that comes that we also have respect for different cultures. We have respect for, you know, working with school leaders in different countries. And it also means different context. But I think the possibility for us as Kunskapsskolan has also been the learning. Because, I mean, I love the idea of learning between schools in Sweden. But the possibility now to have the learning between head of school and school leaders, you know, in different countries, teachers in different country, but also students in different countries. I think that has been a great opportunity for us to develop ourselves. So I think the work of the Mahatma Gandhi Institute has also been important for us to empower those type of collaboration and learnings. And just recently now, we had this project between India and Sweden in, you know, students working together with sustainability and then using digital platforms as a base to be able to do it between countries. But still, it's about, you know, the people doing it. It's about the people, you know, the student. It's still about the teachers supporting and leading the project. So I think your first question is about technology being important, but, you know, people being more important. I think we prove that all the time, that, you know, you need to see the child, but you also need to see and respect the teachers. And when you do that, you can co-create things that are really amazing.
And the investigation of the Mahatma Gandhi Institute has proven that, you know, education is a global affair and there is a lot to be done on a global basis. But I'm curious by it, that the first time you heard that the Mahatma Gandhi Institute said within their report that personalized education is a human right. What was your reaction?
Extremely positive, of course. I had met Mahatma Gandhi Institute a few years earlier when I gave a speech in Visakhapatnam about education. And then I saw lots of activities in India where you used different tools because you haven't got the same amount of resources that we have got in Europe. And I saw very many interesting ways of doing education in a smarter way. And then I was asked to join the committee of this big project together with leading educational people and some leading politicians, ministers of education. So I was probably the only one who was running schools. It was a very, very, very exciting project. And I was very impressed with the way the Mahatma Gandhi Institute conducted the thing, extremely serious, but also leaving lots of room for discussion and listening, not trying to say this is the way everything should be done, but there was always a sense of, yeah, people are different. You have to make sure that you handle it that is the best for everyone. And then also the very important principle that we are talking about potentiality instead of meritocracy. And sometimes the idea is that now let's get 100 that goes to higher education and then they compete and then 100 take there and what about the rest? Well, they have to do something else, you know. The idea is that you should compete with yourself and make sure to do, most people can do much more than what they thought was possible by themselves. So, you know, that's the enhancement of each that I like very much in the approach from Mahatma Gandhi Institute. And I think this is the long term as important as the personal education, that you see everyone like this. And it's not when you take the meritocracy, it's a way that, you know, okay, we take those that are only the best and don't care about the others. You know, this is a very, very important thing that will shape education in the future.
Do you think that the schooling systems around the world have a sufficient picture of what students really need to be successful in their later life?
course, you know, it's changing all the time. You see the rapidly developing situation in the world. Even if, well, I started my other company career in 1970. You know, since then, world population has doubled. 1970, 40% of the world population were living below the poverty line. Now it's 8%. It's fantastic, the development in the world. So much better things have been. I went to India first time 1979. You know, it's a dramatic change that has been. So I have this very positive approach. And the positive things now, when you see the education is international, as you have in environmental issues, and then you have really to make sure that you build that international understanding in creating one world in the future. And there, the Mahatma Gandhi Institute contributed a lot with this report, which I see as the first kind of report. And then the next, how do we compare each other? How do we learn from each other? How do we get ideas? I say, everyone is free to take the best ideas for Kunskap School and use the education. We are not there to compete with others in that. Let's be part of a process where you get better education to everyone.
Well, I think it's important that any country now really think, what is the vision for education in our country? I think there is a lack of that in a lot of countries, but if a country could decide that politicians, of course, have their vision of their country, but going together with researchers as well as educators and find a joint vision. I think that's what you lack a lot in the educational world today. There are a few countries now doing it. I know Finland has been doing it, trying to set the vision for a longer period of time. There's a few countries in the Middle East trying to do it. And if you can form that vision and stick to it and not trying to win easy vote as politicians working with things that are not important, I think this is a chance for us now. So I'm really hoping for more countries to work together with the Mahatma Gandhi Institute and the report and really look into what is important. But you also see it in the European Union now. We listened at one of our conferences to Andreas Schleicher, the head of education in Europe. He's also really into that we need to look in different perspectives of development of students and children. So I think there is something happening now. And I think, you know, I think it's important that Kunskapsskolan in the world and in Sweden can also be a force in this.
I think so. And a final question to you, Päijät. If we look a bit into the future, where do you think Kunskapsskolan education is going? Are we entering new countries? What do you think?
Well, I think we have just started. You know, I visited six countries in Latin America during 2 weeks in March, and even if I start to talk about Korea and communication, everyone wants to talk about education. It's opening up everywhere. I see a dramatic change in education in the future. And the way our model to having all the curriculum up in the cloud, don't forget when we started, the internet was not there. You know, it has just enhanced it, but the key role of the teacher, but also the key respect that people are different and you have a different way. So I think that is an exciting possibility to put the future. So, and you know, education will always be there. So I hope I will be there for many, many more years and see how it develops. At the same time, as it's being owned by a family, we look at this building something not for quarters, but for generations and with quality. So we don't need to rapidly expand that. We take it step by step and make sure we do it with quality and can deliver. That's where we stand.
We were so lucky to have been able to talk to you and proud that you were in Cat Talk. I thank you very, very much for your openness and sharing the experience you had and sharing with us the story about where it all came from and ending with saying, look, there's a lot to do. But we are there to make it happen. Päijät, thank you very, very much. Christian, thank you very much. And I'm sure the listeners around the world, because this will be distributed around the world, will have a great time in listening to this Cat Talk. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
That's all for today. On behalf of Pye Emilsson and Christian Vertel, thank you for listening. And if you want to know more about Kunskapsskolan education and the possibilities within your school, don't hesitate and give Kunskapsskolan a call. They'll be very happy to be of assistance. My name is Koos Wolsjes, and till the next Cat Talk. You have been listening to Cat Talk, brought to you from Stockholm by Kunskapsskolan Education, working around the globe to personalize each student's education according to their individual needs and abilities using the Kunskapsskolan Education Program. If you don't want to miss any Cat Talk, go to www.kunskapsskolan.com or visit the podcast platforms Spotify, Google Podcasts, or Apple Podcasts.